Good morning and welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Most political bodies in Utah are subject to the state's Open Meetings Act, requiring them to open their meetings to the public. But that's not so in the Utah legislature, where Senate Republicans always keep their caucus meetings closed. My first guest this morning has pushed to change this and open up those meetings. Republican Representative Craig Powell represents Heber City. He joins me now on the phone to discuss this push for transparency and other legislation he has run on voter registration issues. And Craig, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks very much for having me, Jeff.
Listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments for State Representative Craig Powell. Our phone number is 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Representative, when did you first become concerned yourself about these caucus meetings not being open to the public?
You know, I think from the very first time that I ran for the legislature, and this is the only political office that I've ever held, so I had to kind of educate myself in 2008 when I ran. But I read a lot in the media, you know, just in the Salt Lake Tribune and other media, and this was criticized from the very beginning. It's difficult when you get in the legislature and you're trying to obviously make relationships, and you can't get anything done if you make relationships. It's difficult to rock the boat early on. We didn't have a whole lot of closed caucuses, even from the 2009-2010, my initial sessions in the House. As you said just a moment ago, the caucuses in the Senate majority are always closed. But, of course, this issue particularly came to a head with the House Bill 477 legislation and the controversy surrounding that almost 2 years ago now.
And what typically happens in these caucus meetings, at least over there on the House side, Craig?
Well, you know, almost all of those that we have are open, so I would encourage your listeners. It's actually quite an educational process. Mm-hmm. You know, just come down anytime the legislature is in session and ask for your representative. Most of the side halls in the legislature for security purposes are secured entryways, but caucuses that we have that are open caucuses in the House, which, as I said, are the majority of our caucuses, are open to the public and the media as long as there are seats there. We have about, in the caucus room, there are about, I'm going to say there's probably about 35 to 40 chairs that are available there for the public. It's not a large room, and now that, you know, we have to put the majority, what is what, 58 Republicans in the House, so we have to fit all of us around the table. It's actually where we usually eat lunch, or fairly often eat lunch, while we basically just discuss, you know, legislative business. But as I said, it would be instructive to come see that. So just to answer your question specifically, though, we're often talking about legislative proposals and debates and what would be the Republican majority position on those things. If there's a complex issue of school funding, taxation, a lot of times budget issues, those sorts of things we will be discussing in those meetings. And that actually leads to, you know, what some of my concerns were and the way that I drafted my legislation for when those discussions happen in caucus.
And, Craig, frequently what we hear from Senate leadership is that if they were to open their caucus meetings, that it would kind of stifle the debate, that lawmakers wouldn't be able to discuss their ideas as freely under the public eye and the public scrutiny. Do you think that's a valid complaint, or do you think that's not legitimate?
No, I don't think that's legitimate. Believe it or not, I've actually found that when we have open caucuses, that people are able to express what I consider the right reasons and right rationale, because they know that there's always that double-checking and fact-checking and verification. And so maybe what they're saying is, you know, in closed caucus, we like to be able to scream at each other, or we like to be able to say, well, you dirty, rotten scoundrel, I can't believe that you didn't support this for me. I don't know exactly what that means. I mean, at least, and this has been an issue when I have email grammar requests at the legislature and things, you know, I just kind of look at my wife and I say, well, I don't have anything in my legislative service to hide. I need to let my constituents know that everything that I do is public, which means that the emails that they send to me, for instance, emails, I mean, I consider those to be public. So in terms of those caucus meetings that you're talking about, I truly can't understand what somebody, in terms of the way I conduct my legislative service, I can't understand what somebody could say in a closed caucus that they wouldn't be willing to say in an open caucus.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking with Republican State Representative Craig Powell of Heber City. Join us on the air at 801-355-TALK with your questions and comments for the lawmaker. 801-355-TALK or 801-355-8255. Send your tweets to us at KCPW. What kind of reception, Craig, have you gotten from other lawmakers in this effort? Have there been any other sympathetic folks to this bill, or has it gotten a pretty chilly reception so far?
You know, the bill itself has not made it out of Rules Committee. In other words, it's really not made it past the first important step in the legislature. I think that obviously it is a critical approach to the way that the Utah legislature and the Republican Senate and House majority caucuses have operated in the past. And so, you know, I can understand that there's going to be resistance to that, because it would basically be admitting that past practices have been wrong. But let me tell you that in a practical level, there has been, I think, some very positive results. The HB 477 controversy was at the end of the session in 2011, and due to public pressure, of course, that bill was repealed and reversed, and I thought that actually turned out to be a good example of the democratic process and citizens participating in that. And as part of my statements, as you may recall at that time, I said that I think part of what got the legislature into the problems with House Bill 477 on the freedom of information issues was the fact that that was presented to our closed Republican caucus and was discussed as legislation there. So what my bill did was, the first and most important thing was to provide that any time that legislation is discussed at which at a meeting at which there are present a majority of either the House or the Senate, that meeting has to be open, no matter if we're convened on the House floor or wherever we are. Now, that's the same provision that all Utah public bodies are subject to, as you were alluding to in the introduction, whether it's city councils, county councils, school boards, etc. And I think it's just not too much to ask for the legislature to follow the same rules that we have passed for other bodies to implement. So what happened this year after I introduced the legislation in 2012, after working on it for over the course of last summer and trying to craft it so that it would get at the evils that I viewed, was that I introduced the legislation, and it got some media, it got some press, and got some analysis of what type of particular bill it was. There was a Democratic senator who introduced a bill similarly in the Senate, and so there was some comparison of our bills and things. But then, after the legislation being introduced and the news media stories, a wonderful, interesting thing happened, and that is the Utah House Republican Caucus did not hold a single closed caucus during the entire 2012 legislative session. Uh-huh. I think what they found was that it's better not to take the criticism, and, you know, it's not that hard to conduct yourself according to open meeting principles, and the sky didn't fall when we had to have all of our deliberations that we did as the Republican majority, when we had to do all of those in public. It was fine. There were no negative ramifications like some of the representatives and senators had been saying, as you mentioned earlier, about, you know, not being able to have frank discussions or those sorts of things.
Craig, let's talk about a different bill you ran this year, also aimed at transparency, HJR 15, which would have required the House to have a bill in its possession for at least 72 hours before passing it. Was this also tied into the controversy surrounding HB 477?
Yes, you're right about that, Jeff. In the thick of that controversy over House Bill 477, I reflected on, at least in that instance, what the failings were in the legislative process, I felt that towards the end of the session, especially as we get to the last week of the session, things get very quick and rushed. Utah has the shortest legislative session in the entire country. It's 45 days, and that's 45 calendar days, not legislative days.
Right.
And it's a hard cutoff, meaning that when that gavel comes down on midnight, we are done. We're required by the Constitution to be done, and we cannot even make a motion to extend that. And there's no other state, actually, that has that particular calendar, an abbreviated schedule like we do, which I think leads to lots of efficiencies. It's probably, in general, it's a good thing for government in a state the size of ours. One of the problems, of course, however, is that we don't get a lot of time to consider legislation. And unfortunately, in my view, sometimes legislators will attempt to take advantage of this by just pushing things through in a quick fashion at the end. So what my proposal was to require that any chamber have a bill in its possession for at least 3 days before passing it, so that you can't just have something come and just pass it immediately when it is first introduced, like within a matter of hours or even minutes, as often happens. And one other aspect of this that occurs that complicates this is that earlier in the session, we have committee meetings, and, you know, most of the citizens are familiar with legislative committees, and they hear about the, you know, Health and Human Services Committee or the Economic Development Committee hearing a bill. Well, as we get to the end of the legislative session, our rules allow for those committees to be bypassed, at least in one house, and then we don't even have committee hearings. So sometimes you're quickly going through several dozen bills on
right.
the House floor, and you get bills that you've never seen, never heard, never read before, and just you haven't had time to, because we don't have staff at the legislature, individual representatives, and it's just sometimes just too rushed. And so, yeah, it was a proposal to build some additional time in to make every legislator introduce their bills earlier in the session, to have them considered and pending longer. Unfortunately, our rules are quite complicated, and that bill did have a hearing in the House in the Joint Rules Committee.
Mm-hmm.
This session, I did get a hearing on the bill that you're referring to, but there was a lot of discussion, and it was soundly defeated. Not a single legislator voted for it. You know, it's probably something that I need to give some more thought to, but I certainly think the principle is important.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is State Representative Craig Powell of Heber City. Join us on the air at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back here with more Politics Up Close and Representative Craig Powell. Stick around. You're listening to Politics Up Close here on KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson. My guest this morning is Republican State Representative Craig Powell of Heber City. We're talking with him about some of his bills related to government transparency and other matters. You can join us on the air at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. With your questions and comments for the representative, you can also tweet to us at KCPW. Representative Powell, getting to a bit of a different topic, you are also the sponsor of HB 493, aimed at campaign disclosures. This bill went through several revisions during the process this year, but in the end it did pass. What was this legislation aimed at exactly?
So the campaign disclosure bill it just made sure that candidates who are running for different offices, separate offices at the same time,
mm-hmm.
Have to make sure that they keep their campaign accounts separate, and then they have to make sure that they're filing separately on both campaigns. That was a collaborative effort from several different legislators, and I kind of agreed to sponsor that once we saw that issue. We had, as you know, in Salt Lake County, for instance, we had people who were serving in the state legislature running for county offices.
Right.
And, you know, we actually talked to each of those candidates about the new territory that was being charted. And for instance, Senator Ben Gaddams, Senator Ross Romero, I think, and others agreed that the safeguards that we put in place there, just to make more transparent where the money was coming from and how they were being used in their other campaigns, would be fully disclosed.
How, in general, do you think, how good do you think Utah's campaign finance disclosure laws are, Representative Powell, talking about transparency?
Well, you know, here's my take on that. I think that from transparency and disclosure, we do pretty well. In fact, the mantra that you'll continually hear cited by folks in Utah, since we have some of the most lax campaign finance restrictions, the mantra that you'll always hear is, oh, well, transparency is the answer. As long as we let voters know, we're okay, just make sure that we know where the money is coming from. I mean, I might actually appreciate even a little bit more disclosure on that in terms of maybe categorization and better cross-referencing about who the lobbyists are, who are the special interest groups, which individuals who are donating money might be registered lobbyists. But in terms of transparency, I think that with our websites and the reports that are required, I think that we do pretty well. My bigger concern, Jeff, is with the donations themselves and the fact that we have so many legislators whose campaigns and a lot of their legislative service and legislative expenses are funded almost exclusively or at least primarily by lobbyists, special interest groups, and corporations that lobby the legislature. It's my personal position that I don't accept any of those sorts of contributions from lobbyists, special interest groups, corporations, et cetera, and it's just a personal pledge that I took. Now, the first year that I was in the legislature, I tinkered with some bills that would provide restrictions on that, and you know, it's really difficult with a lot of the Supreme Court precedents that we have and the freedom of speech issues about campaign finance, but I've settled on the position that this is actually should be a voluntary test that legislators implement that says, you know, I just don't see the need to take this money. It's not huge amounts. You know, several thousand dollars per year is what your average run-of-the-mill representative, say in the House, like me, gets. And I just didn't ever think it was worth the criticism or the grief or the suspicion that is cast, you know, by the media and by constituents when you have those sorts of contributions. And so I just say, hey, voluntarily, let's agree not to accept them.
Representative, let me read you a tweet we got from one of our listeners. Miriam says, thank you for standing up for Utahns for Grandma, the open records law. She says, rare to find in a Republican Utah legislator. And I want to ask you, Craig, about a news conference that you held last year following the legislative session and HB 477, that bill to critics would have said would have gutted Utah's open records law that was later repealed. You voted at that time for the legislation both times it passed, but you later held a news conference at the Capitol saying that you basically were forced into voting it. Tell me again, remind our listeners about exactly what happened there.
Yeah, thanks for asking, Jeff. You know, as I've explained in writing several times, and I'm happy to just recount briefly, the circumstances that led to the passage of that bill were that it was explained briefly to us in a closed caucus with the leadership support for that bill. They said it was important and, you know, we need to get it passed, and here we are at the end of the legislative session. We don't have much time. We were very busy those last few days of the legislative session. None of us had time to read through it very closely or know exactly what it was doing. Mm. And most importantly, Jeff, we did not have the scrutiny of the media. And, you know, it's rare for a politician to be praising the media, I suppose, but what I rely on a lot of times myself, even as I'm sitting at my desk on the House floor, I can Google a bill or Google an issue and see what's been written on it in the last several weeks, you know, by some of the Salt Lake media outlets or on radio stations and their feeds like your own, and then I say, oh yeah, okay, I remember what this bill is about. Oh, I know what the pros and cons are. Because of the rushed fashion in which House Bill 477 was pushed through, there was not a single story, there's not a single account, no objective analysis summary or competing sides or arguments at all about that bill. And so, you know, it's no surprise that the bill passed unanimously. Every single Republican who was in that House caucus meeting just, you know, passed it, and zoom, it went on to the governor. It had already flown through the Senate. And so by the time the weekend came, just two or three days later, and I was able to go back and research the bill and say, you know, what does this do? What did we just pass? And not only that, as I began hearing from my own constituents, which is obviously the most important part of the process, and they said, hey, I don't support this. And I said, wow, I wish I'd had time to hear from you and talk about this before we actually voted on the bill. So, I didn't mind telling my constituents that I was wrong and pushing hard to get that bill repealed, which we were able to do.
But was there pressure then from legislative leaders at the time? Did you feel that your own legislation would have been killed had you voted against HB 477?
As I've said many times, and I don't mind, I think the Salt Lake Tribune once used a headline saying that I was backpedaling or something. I never said that there was any direct threat. I never said that there was anything explicit. You're in a particular situation in the legislature where leadership and the committee structure is such that we don't have full control over our own legislation. Mm-hmm. In fact, everybody knows it's pretty much a crapshoot, especially as you get up to the last 4 or 5 days on which bills are going to pass and which are not. And those who have more influence, those who have more seniority, usually have more say in what actually happens and gets passed. I just, at that point, felt like, since I knew coming out of that closed caucus meeting when nobody really raised any debate or argument about this issue and it had been presented to us by leadership, I thought, well, I'm going to be voting for it, not because I know what the bill says or does, and not because I feel strongly one way or another, mm-hmm. but at this point in the session, it's quite unusual, actually, for us in a legislative caucus meeting to be discussing a particular bill. Hmm. And as I could see the way the votes were coming down on that bill, I mean, I would have been the only, maverick there on that particular bill. But by the way, Jeff, even the explanation that I'm giving to you in this 90 seconds or whatever is more time than I had to think about it when we were actually voting on it then. So, it's just one of those things that hopefully those who change their votes on it, like me, are able to fess up, to the voters and say, hey, we messed up. On the particular legislative leadership question that you're asking, I'm certainly not accusing any of them that they would have done anything. I had some bills killed this past session, and there are various reasons for that I was somewhat upset about. You get bills that don't pass, and you can never maybe quite pinpoint what the reason is. It's sometimes just too big of a risk to take,
This is Politics Up Close. We have a few more minutes left with State Representative Craig Powell of Heber City. And Representative, switching topics a bit, there's a debate going on across the country right now about voter registration and voter rights. And there was an interesting article in the Salt Lake Tribune this week about how some Utah counties apparently have more registered voters than actual citizens. You ran and passed a voter registration bill, HB 253, during this past session, seeking to make it a bit easier to remove people from voter registration rolls, which raised a couple eyebrows. Tell me what the goal of this legislation was.
Well, yeah, I really want to compliment Democrats in the legislature, the Republicans, some study groups such as the ACLU, League of Women Voters, who gave some good input on this bill. The idea was simply to make sure that our county clerks have better tools to clean up voter rolls, because if anybody goes and looks at the voter roll, if you look at your own neighborhood, you'll say, oh, my heavens, that's my neighbor who hasn't lived here for 12 years. They're still on there. And the clerks kind of do the best job that they can. But this bill, as it was originally set up, it was going to say, after a certain period of time, the county clerk mails you a notification if you haven't voted for 8 years at all and haven't contacted the county, haven't voted, haven't shown up. The county clerk mails you a notification and says, are you still there? And if you don't respond to that, then the county clerk is free to remove your name from the voter registration. Well, as I said, there were some groups that raised some legitimate concerns about that. We worked on it throughout the session. And ultimately, the compromise that we came up with was, when that mailer gets mailed out, rather than the county clerk immediately removing the name if there's no response, instead, the county clerk is required to receive back from the U.S. post office some sort of a certified return receipt that says this address no longer valid, this person no longer lives here. Mm-hmm. Once that happens, then the county clerk is able to remove that name, which I think does still provide a good mechanism to help clean those voter rolls. But you're right, that article that I saw this week, you know, just validated my concerns. I know, I have never been in politics before, I've never run for any office before I held this office, and as my wife and I have worked on campaigns and, you know, looked through the list and had to try to go out and knock on doors and things, you just realize that this is a gargantuan task for the county clerk works to keep this up. So I think it gave some more mechanisms to the county clerks without unduly infringing on the right to vote.
Representative Powell, we've talked a lot lately on this show and on KCBW about the Common Core standards adopted by the Utah Board of Education back in 2010, the standards developed by the National Governors Association in Language Arts and Math. And you recently held a forum there in Heber City about the Common Core at a time when we're seeing a lot of conservative groups and citizens question what the Common Core is all about. Tell me about the goal of holding this forum. Was it to clear up the misinformation out there about the Common Core, or what exactly?
Well, you know, even using a term like that, unfortunately, becomes politically charged misinformation, because I think to the extent that this has become a partisan issue, each side believes that the other side has misinformation. So it would be difficult for me to clear up misinformation, because I don't know which side would say I was doing that, which actually is kind of what happened at this symposium that I held. I invited the state education leaders, such as Brenda Hales, who's the current curriculum director for the state of Utah, Patty Harrington, who's a former state superintendent of public instruction, who's still heavily involved. I invited people who are critical of Common Core, and for a full 8 hours, we sat all day at a middle school in Heber City, and each topic was covered in a different hour, and I'm going to be posting all those videos soon, just because it was a fascinating discussion, I think, about, you know, what exactly is the effort of Common Core. It's a wonderful attempt for us to move our students into the 21st century and beyond, to make sure that we have higher standards that are accepted across states, across international countries, that we're modeling what's being done elsewhere. And it really is just raising our standards. You know, the only concern that I have had, and that many of my constituents raised, which is the reason I held the symposium, is that there are aspects of it that the federal government has encouraged, supported, or incentivized, or in some cases even required. And those of us in the Utah legislature, not just Republicans, but Democrats as well, who have had the experience of No Child Left Behind, and some of the absolutely, you know, just crazy and very onerous requirements that have been imposed by No Child Left Behind, have said, we don't want to get into another strings attached program with the federal government. And I was really looking at it from that perspective. I think what the Utah State Board of Education did last Friday, which I think some of the media outlets have described as being, again, part of this partisan reaction, you know, the conservative groups. If you go back and look at the minutes and see what the state school board did last Friday in pulling out of the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium, which is designed to produce tests that are aligned with the Common Core in many states, the reasoning for that was simply that Utah can and will be able to adopt whatever sorts of assessments from whichever vendors that it chooses to, including the same vendors that are offering those tests through the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium. It's just that we're not going to be saddled with some of the contractual restrictions that were in that consortium that might require us to do things that we have found a better way to do. So I think that we have the best of both worlds right now. We have all the advantages of the Common Core. We have the assessments that have been put together that we have been a major contributor to, and we also have all the freedom, no strings from the federal government. We are prepared to move forward into a world-class education in Utah because of these standards, Jeff.
Finally, Representative Powell, let's talk about your re-election bid this year. What are you hoping to do? What are the major issues beyond what we've discussed today that you really want to tackle going back into the legislature in 2013?
Well, you know, I want to make sure that I can build a few other members of the Utah legislature, and I'm happy to say that there are a few who have been elected through the primary process and are the nominees now, who have actually said that they follow my approach of not accepting campaign contributions from lobbyists, special interest groups, corporations. I think that just continuing to beat that drum in a subtle way so that I don't alienate, you know, my fellow legislators. This is just the way that politics is done throughout the state, but also in all other states and at the federal level, is with lots of funding from these special interest groups. But I do hope to continue to have that message out there. Now, in addition, on education, I serve on the House Education Committee. Public education is my biggest passion in the legislature. It always has been. It's the reason that I originally got in the legislature, elected by my local constituents. I just want to make sure that we protect and strengthen public education in this state. There has been a move to equalize what's called equalized education funding.
Right.
This has been quite controversial in places like Salt Lake District and Park City District, is one of the areas that I'm running right now. Utah already has the most equalized education funding in the entire nation. We are ranked number one every year for the amount of state dollars that go out equally to all of our districts. So I'll be taking a strong position on that and just making sure that we maintain local control. I believe that if local districts want to be able to increase their property taxes and make their district have a particular type of funding structure, they should be able to do that, and the state legislature shouldn't be sticking its nose in that kind of business. So education, ethics, and ultimately just an economy and jobs that are supported by low taxes that we're going to be able to have, make sure that the corporate interests are not having too much undue influence at the legislature as we try to strengthen our economy. I would say those are my main issues.
We've been speaking with State Representative Craig Powell, a Republican from Heber City. Representative Powell, thank you for joining us for this informative discussion, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
This is Politics Up Close. We'll be right back.